holding on for Tess Amr Aleph, the eighth line. We said in the Mishnah Yodu Shamim that if rain falls, then once it gets to the point where a mikvah would be ruined by the rain, then you're allowed to leave the sukkah. We said that a mikvah is like a porridge, like somewhere between a food that's not particularly thick, like kugel, let's say, and not particularly thin like soup. Let's say we might say a mikvah maybe is the consistency of cholent or something. So once you get to the point where that would be ruined, then you're allowed to, by the rain, then you're allowed to leave the sukkah. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learn a braisa, Mishat Tisra HaMikvah Shal Grisim. Specifically, what we mean is a mikvah, porridge made out of split beans. Most of the Rishonim say that that kind gets ruined faster than Rashi says, and most other Mepharshim agree, that that kind gets ruined faster than other kinds, and therefore that's a kula. That once even that kind is going to get ruined, then that's already time to leave the sukkah. What if you don't have such a porridge? There are a couple of Rishonim who say that maybe then you have to wait longer, but most of them say that you just, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if it's at the point where you can estimate that that would happen, that it would be getting ruined, or if it's reached the point where if your house was like that, you wouldn't stay in your house, then that's when you're able to leave the sukkah. So the Gemara tells, Abaya have a kol Yosef kameder Rabbi Yosef b'metalalta. Abaya was sitting in front of Rabbi Yosef, who was his Rebbe, in the sukkah. Metalalta is the Aramaic word for sukkah. Noshev zika, a wind started blowing. Kamaisit tzivusa, and it was causing little bits, little chips of wood and things to fall from the schach onto the table or into the food. Omelahud Rabbi Yosef ponuli monai mechafa. So Rabbi Yosef tells the other people over there, the Talmidim, and then and the attendants and whatever, clear my stuff out of here. I'm going inside. Omale Abaya. Abaya says, how is that allowed yet? We learn in the Mishnah that only once the mikvah would get ruined, the little amount of chips or whatever of the schach that's falling down into the food is not enough to reach that point yet. Omale, so Rabbi Yosef says, for me it's different. The DD for myself, Kimanda Nina Datoi, since I am very finicky. For me, this is the equivalent of Misha Tisra HaMikvah. Rashi, in fact, refers to a Gemara in Psachim, where Rabbi Yosef says about himself, the Gemara mentions over there that there are people who are finicky like that, and Chayehem Eine Chayim, their life is like not a real life because they have a very hard time of it. And mentioned, Rabbi Yosef says over there that he's one of those people because he's a very finicky person. So that's also the halacha. If you have a person who's known to be finicky, now a person can't just decide off the bat, hey, I decided today I'm finicky, and therefore I'm able to leave the sukkah for a little discomfort like that. It has to be somebody who's known in the past to be finicky about that kind of thing. And then, yes, if it comes to that, then he can leave the sukkah if he finds it uncomfortable. Turn it up, we learn in a braisa. Suppose a person was eating in the sukkah and it started raining, the yorad, and he left the sukkah, the same way as we had before, that going into the sukkah is called oila, the same way leaving it is called yorad. So he left the sukkah. We don't bother him to come back in and finish his meal until he finishes his meal. In other words, once he started and ate some in the sukkah, now, even though he's going to be eating more than the shear outside the sukkah, we said the other day that the shear we said was a bit over a kibetza, and he's going to be eating more bread than that. Nevertheless, because he already had reshus to leave the sukkah because of the rain, then we're not matriach him to come back in. He can finish his meal indoors. Similarly, how you yoshin tachas sukkah, if a person was sleeping under, meaning within the sukkah, the yodug shamim, and rain started falling, the yorad, so he left the sukkah and went inside. Ein matrichin oisei lalas ad sheyer. We're not matriachin to go back into the sukkah until yeir. Now the word yeir we have to figure out, which is what the Gemara is going to discuss now. It could be yeir with an aleph, which is meloshin ur, meaning until it gets to be daylight, or it could be yeir with an ayin, which would mean he wakes up. So that's the Gemara is going to ask now and figure out which one is it. Which one are we saying that? We're not matriachim. Iboilu ad sheyei ur with an ayin or ad sheyei ur with an aleph. What is it? We're not matriachim to go back into the sukkah until he wakes up or until it gets light. Until it gets light would mean Rashi says alois hashachar. So in other words, are we saying so? So in other words, ad sheyei ur with an aleph would mean that he only has to go back into the sukkah if he wants to sleep past the Alois HaShachar. But if he wakes up sometime before that, in the middle of the night, then we wouldn't require him to go back into the sukkah to finish up his sleep. On the other hand, if we say the correct word in the Braisa is ad sheyeh ur with an ayin, then it would mean as soon as he wakes up, the first time he wakes up during that night, even if it's in the middle of the night, we're going to tell him, since it stopped raining, go back into the sukkah. Which one is it? So the Gemara says, Tashma, let's prove from a different Braisa, which says, ad sheyeh the yala omer HaShachar, that he doesn't have to go back into the sukkah until Ye'or and Alois HaShachar comes up. So you have to ask Tauti, why would it be saying two different things? In fact, the word Ye'or might not even mean Alois HaShachar, Rashi points out. It might even mean a later point, when not just Alois HaShachar, when you have the first crack of dawn in the sky, but rather a later point when you have when the whole east side of the sky is lit up, which is which is sometime later. So first, so it's saying that, and then it's saying Shiyala Omer HaShachar, that dawn will break. So which is it? Then there are two statements that are contradicting. Ela Emer Ad Sheyeh Ur with an ayin Shiyala Omer HaShachar. So it must be that in both braises, the correct word is supposed to be Yeh Ur with an ayin, meaning to wake up. So only if he wakes up after Alois HaShachar. So therefore, if he wakes up before Alois HaShachar, then we're not matriach him to go back to the sukkah, and vice versa, it has to be both. If it's Alois HaShachar and he's still asleep, we don't make him wake up to go back to the sukkah. We tell him, fine, you can sleep as long as you want. When you wake up, then later in the day, if you want to sleep again, you're going to go into the sukkah. So it needs to be, so in order for him to be required to go back in after it stopped raining, there needs to be both criteria. That he wakes up, and that waking up is that waking up is after Alois HaShachar and not before. And this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, Moshe l'maha davar d'ayma. The Mishnah had said, what can we compare this to? This case where a person is eating or sleeping in the sukkah, and then they're forced to leave because of the rain. So the Mishnah had given a mashal like a servant who was mixing a cup of wine for his master, and the shafach loy kita in alponav, and he spilled a pitcher of water in his face. So Iboilahu, so the Bnei HaYeshiva had a question. Mi shafach l'mi. When we say he spilled on his face, who's the first he, and who's the he, and who's the his? In other words, there's two ways we could understand the mashal. One could be that the eved is acting in a careless way. He's not doing his job right, and therefore he winds up spilling the pitcher of water in his master's face. The nimshal of that would be, Rashi says, that the Jewish people are not doing their avoda properly. So it's like Hashem wants us to do the avoda in the right way, and instead we're doing it carelessly, and it's tantamount to spilling a pitcher of water in Hashem's face. Or is it the other way around, that we're saying that the master takes the pitcher of water and throws it in the slave's face and tells him, get out of here, I don't need your service, and the nimshal would be that Hashem is throwing us out of the sukkah. So which one is it? Tashma, we can prove to Tanya, we learn in a price. Shofach le rabbi kitin aponav. It means the second possibility. The master is spilling a pitcher of water in the slave's face, but on the line, he says to him, efshi b'shimoshach, I don't want your service. In other words, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing in a way that I approve of, therefore get out. Now, what's the nafkamina between what would be the nafkamina one way or the other? The Ritva points out an interesting possibility. We're saying that you can leave the sukkah when it's raining. We said that you can leave it when Mishatisra Hamikva. But is it that we're saying you can or maybe even should leave as soon as possible? In other words, if we say that in the marshal, the slave is spilling the water in the master's face, in other words, that the slave is being careless, well, then the nimshal of it is we're saying that we're not doing our avoda well. So therefore, we might as well leave the sukkah as soon as possible, the moment that it reaches Mishatisra Hamikva. Because anyway, we're doing our job carelessly, and in a certain sense, like so to speak, like the longer we stay there, the more we're insulting Hashem. On the other hand, if we say that it's the master pouring the water in the slave's face, then it means, in other words, the nimshal is we may have been doing, at least we thought we were doing, what we were supposed to. Hashem is saying, for his own reasons, that he doesn't approve of it, but therefore that means we maybe shouldn't be in so much of a rush to leave the sukkah the earliest possible moment. Since the Gemara concludes the second one, then it would mean the second possibility. With that said, again, we did mention yesterday, first of all, that the Rogachover said that this doesn't apply when the rain began before Sukkot, only when it's sometime during Sukkot. And the fact is, Minhag Chabad is to eat in the Sukkot regardless, even if it's raining hard. In fact, it's not just Minhag Chabad. In general, the Minhag of most branches of Hasidus is to do that, is to sit in the Sukkot even if it's raining. In Shulchan Aruch, it actually says that if a person, this is an example of what we talked about a couple of days ago, that if a person does something where he's not obligated to, he's called a hebyet, he's called like a simple person, but the Talmidei of Baal Shem Tov and all of their Hasidim throughout the generations always took the view, okay, so we'll be called a hebyet, big deal. At least we want to be in the sukkah, even if it means that, and we just, okay, so we'll make it that we don't feel the discomfort. There are various examples in Otzim and Hoge Chabad. Actually, he has a number of illustrations of that from different periods of Chassidus, of general Chassidus, and of Chabad Chassidus. For example, there's one from the time of the Rebbe Rashab, where the Bacharim are eating in the sukkah, and like they have their coats sort of like hanging over the front of their faces and their soup so that rain doesn't get in their soup or in their food as they're eating. And the Rebbe Rashab saw that and was very, very pleased with that, that these bacharim are showing what a chassid should be like. But basically the idea is, yes, it's tzar, potim and asukah, but we're not going to allow a little rain to give us tzar and to leave the sukkah. There was one time also in Tavshin Lamed Vav in 1975, it rained almost continuously throughout Sukkot, and somebody asked the Rebbe in a letter, what's going on over here? What we're saying in the Gemara over here? Does that mean that Hashem is showing he doesn't want our service and is throwing us out of the sukkah? And the Rebbe said, essentially, no. The fact is, people did sit in the sukkah. The people did even make the bracha, and of course, it would be a bracha levatala if you're not supposed to sit in the sukkah under such conditions. So it shows that Hashem does want our avodah after all. The Rebbe didn't elaborate, but I guess the idea is, in other words, that Hashem is giving us a test, essentially, but not that he's actually throwing us out of the sukkah, because the fact is we did persevere and we did stay in the sukkah. Okay. Since we're talking about, though, in the Mishnah, about things that are not such a good sinin, in this case, rain during sukkahs, so the Gemara digresses from here to the end of the perek to talk about other things that are also not such a good sinin. We learn in Braisa, Bizman Shachama Loika, when the sun is Loika. Now, usually a liqui means an eclipse. So we'll learn the Gemara first, and then we'll talk about a couple of possibilities, what's going on. So Bizman Shachama Loika, when the sun is Loika, let's start with the translation right now, eclipse, and we'll deal with later on various possibilities about it. Simin Ra L'chol Olam Kuloi, it's a bad sign for the entire world. What is it comparable to? It's like a human king who made a suda for his servants. And by the suda, he placed a lantern in front of them so they'd have light. But then, then later on, he gets angry at them. So he tells his servant, take away the lantern and leave them sitting in the dark. So the nimshal is, in other words, that Hashem is saying, you're not doing good, therefore I'm going to take away the lantern, and therefore the sun or whichever heavenly body is not going to shine as bright. Well, here we're talking about the sun. Later on, we're going to talk about the other ones. So Tanya to me. So okay. So let's talk first of all. Then what's going on here? The thing is, the big question that everybody asks on this is that, if we're talking about eclipses, those are very, very predictable. Those actually, they follow certain mathematical laws, and they can actually predict them even thousands of years in advance, or post-dict them, so to speak. They can calculate backwards and find when an eclipse took place on the exact time and place and whatever, even thousands of years earlier. So how are we saying that it has to do? How are we saying that it's a bad simon for the world? And the Gemara is going to talk about that they come because of certain averus and all. How is that possible if they're so accurately predictable? So there's a lot of different explanations. There's a lot of different explanations. One of them, there's actually a sikha in Chelek Tesvav where the Rebbe goes through those on Parshas Bereishis, where the Rebbe goes through a number of those explanations and figure and then deals with them with the pros and cons of each one. One of them is that maybe, first of all, the Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz actually writes in one of his drushes that maybe we're not talking about eclipses at all. Maybe we're talking about sunspots or similar phenomena that happen with other planets and things, where the illumination, the amount of illumination that they give us, changes in not such a predictable way. That's a little harder, because first of all, sunspots don't really make an appreciable difference to the sun's brightness. And anyway, the Rebbe points out in a footnote to the Sikha over there, even those are much more predictable than they thought in Rabbi Yonasan's time. There's a number of reasons why that explanation is a little hard. So another one is the Shalach HaKadosh says essentially that Hashem knows in advance everything that's going to happen, including the Averis that people are going to do. And therefore Hashem timed it to begin with, that eclipses should happen at times when he knew in advance that people aren't going to be acting right. The Rebbe said, I don't know. Another explanation some Mefoshim want to say is that maybe we're talking about whether the eclipse is visible or not. You can have an eclipse which happens, but it's invisible because of clouds. So maybe we're talking about only when the eclipse is visible. And the Rebbe doesn't really like that one either. The upshot is, he explains, and actually there's something somewhat similar in Aruch HaNer that Rebbe develops the idea further, that what it is that what a little bit like what the Shalach HaKadosh is saying, but not actual Averis, but rather the times when eclipses happen are times when people are more prone to doing various Averis. They're a time when there's less Hashpa, there's less Gilui HaLakos in the world, which is represented therefore by the eclipse. And therefore, those are times that when people are more susceptible to various kinds of evils, various kinds of mice, of bad mice that we're going to talk about in the continuation of the Gemara. So in other words, it's a matter of mazel, in other words. And since, as we say in Masechta Shabbos, ein mazel Yisrael, therefore, our Gemara goes on to say that when the Jewish people are doing Ritzon Hashamakim, then we have nothing to worry about. The Goyim, then we're saying, still do, not necessarily because the Goyim are doing Averis at those times, but because Goyim are more controlled by mazel than we are, and therefore they have much more of a chance that they're going to trip up at times like that. That's the gist of the explanation in the Sikha. So now, continuing the Gemara, Tanya the Meir Omer calls Manshema Oris Loikin whenever the heavenly bodies are Loikin, and let's continue to translate that as eclipsed, based on how the Rebbe is explaining it. So as any time the heavenly bodies in general are eclipsed. So before we talk about the sun, now we're also talking about the moon and the various planets and stars. Whenever that happens, Simen Ralas in Am Shah Yisrael. It's a bad simen for the enemies of the Jewish people, which is the Gemara's usual euphemism for the Jewish people themselves. Because the Jewish people are very accustomed to getting hit, to getting punished. Meaning, in other words, that Rashi says, we Jewish people end up getting more punishments and more severe things happening than any of the other nations. Now, the Medrash says the good thing about it is Hashem does it a little here, a little there, rather than the Goyim. When it comes time for a certain Goyish nation, when their time is up, then bang, Hashem just gives them one big blow and then they're gone forever. We're not like that. But nevertheless, the fact is that over time, we have a lot more poor on us, a lot more punishments and then disasters and whatever that Hashem brings on us more than the other nations. And therefore, the mayor is saying, so whenever something like that happens, that there's an eclipse, then we Jewish people have special reason to worry. Marshal, a sefer, Shabbala Beis HaSefer. It's like when a teacher comes to school, Uratsua Biyadei, and he has a strap in his hand, he's going to give one of the kids petch. Midoyig, which kid starts worrying that he's going to get petch? Misha Rogel Lokus, the kid who's regularly gets petch from the Rebbe, he's the one who's going to be worried. So, in other words, the Nimshal is us Jewish people versus the Goyim. Marsha teaches out. We're talking about a kid who knows how to learn, and the teacher knows that he knows how to learn, and he's just being careless, and he's being silly, and he's being childish, and whatever. So then the teacher may give him a little clap in order to get him back on the straight path. And so it is with us Jewish people relative to the Goyish nations. Onward. Tanarabanan, we learn in a Braisa, Bizman Shacham Aloika, when there's a solar eclipse, Simin Ral Umasa Olam, then it's a bad sign for the nations of the world. Levon Aloika, when the moon is eclipsed, Simin Ral Sineim Shah Yisrael, then it's a bad simon for the enemies of the Jewish people, or we take out the word enemies. Mipnesha Yisrael, Morin Lalavana, for Umasa Olam Lachama, because we Jewish people count according to the moon, we have our months go according to the moon, and the Goyim count their years and months go according to the sun. So you have Bechlal, I mean, you have not just that we count by the moon, but there's also the fact that we're Doimin Lalavana, that we resemble the moon, that it waxes and wanes, and so do we, et cetera, et cetera. Continues the Gemara. Loike b'mizrach, if the sun is eclipsed when it's in the east side of the sky, simin ra yosh b'mizrach, then it's a bad sign for the people who live on the east side of the world. It shows, in other words, like, to continue with the explanation from the Sikha before, it means, in other words, that Hashem is indicating for them that it's a time when they're more susceptible and more prone to averus and to negative behavior and whatever, and therefore they should watch out for that. If the eclipse happens when the sun is in the west, then it's the same kind of thing for the people who live on the west side. The emtsaharakia, if it happens when the sun is in the middle of the sky, simin ra l'chol olam kula, then it's a bad sign for the whole world. Also, pon of domin ladam, if the face of the sun when it's eclipsed resembles blood, sometimes you have an eclipse where the where the sun, you have a little bit of the glow of the sun is still visible, and so it looks reddish. So when that happens, it shows cherev bala olam. It shows that the sword, in other words, war, is coming to the world, and therefore it resembles red, which is therefore it resembles blood, which is red. Lasak. If on the other hand, sometimes during an eclipse, the sun appears black, like a sackcloth, which is made out of goat hair, and typically is black or very dark. So then, chitzei rav, boin la'olam, then it's a sign that the arrows of hunger are coming to the world. In other words, there's going to be a famine. What does a famine have to do with black? Rashi says because people's faces turn black and dark during a famine for lack of food. Marsha says a different point, that a sack is usually what you put food inside. Here, where you have the sun resembling a sack, you're meant to understand that it's like an empty sack, and therefore that means there's not going to be any food, or there's going to be very little food. Lazu, if during the eclipse the sun resembles both, it's red and black, maybe different stages in the eclipse or whatever, then both the sword and arrows of hunger are coming to the world. There's going to be both, in other words, war and famine. Also continues the Braisa, Loka Bikni Sosai, if the eclipse takes place when the sun is going in, meaning when it's setting, Quranus Shoyalabai, then it's a simon. Yes, there's going to be a hard time, there's going to be a punishment, but it's going to be delayed in coming. The same way as the eclipse was delayed until the end of the day. Bitsi, on the other hand, if the eclipse happens first thing in the morning, as the sun is rising, the maheras lavai, then it shows that the puranus, that the punishment, the disaster, is going to be happening very soon, just like as soon as the sun's rising, it's already eclipsed. The yeshem chiluf advarim, some say, though, the other way around, because the other way around would be, if it happens when it's setting, then it shows that the puranus is going to come very quickly, like this, like there's no time in the day left for the sun to be there during the day, and already it's eclipsed. The same way, there's not going to be any delay in the Puranus coming, and vice versa. If it happens during in the morning, then it means it's going to be delayed in coming, because it means that there's plenty of time left for the sun to still be doing its job during the day after the eclipse. And the Braisa finishes off the Emochokal Umava Uma Shaloika, Sha'ena Lakel, Loika Ima. There's not a single time when a nation, one of the nations of the world, gets punished that its God doesn't get punished with it. Rashi explains its God refers really to the Malach that argues on its behalf in Shemayim. We know there's 70 nations and 70 Malachim for them in Shemayim. Okay, nowadays you have more nation states, you have more countries than that, but some of them are the same ethnicity and the same whatever, and therefore they may share a Malach or something. But anyway, the point is, so each one, Rashi gives an example. You have Samach Mem is the Sar of Esav and other ones. So when a particular nation gets punished, then so does their Malach in Shemayim. Shenema v'chol olakei Mitzrayim es ha-shvatim. As the pasuk says, Hashem says by Makas Bechoris that not only the physical Egyptians, not only the Egyptian people are going to get punished, but also against all of the gods of Mitzrayim, I will execute judgments. Maharsha says we're talking over here actually about the sun and moon and planets themselves. You have various Goyish nations that worship them. So therefore, that's the connection over here. We're saying that when the sun gets eclipsed, it means that not only the sun is getting eclipsed, it means that all the people who worship it as well are getting affected and harmed by that as well. Now, on the other hand, when the Jewish people are doing what Hashem wants, then they don't have to be afraid of any of these. As the pasuk says, Koyamar Hashem says through the Navi Yirmiya, El derech ha-goyim al tumadu, don't learn from the ways of the goyim. Meaning don't. Now, in pshat of the pasuk, what it means is don't learn from them. Their astrology and their magic and whatever. But here, the Gemara is explaining. Rashi explains, don't learn from their ways as to act like them. Learn to act like Jews should, not like Goyim should. And then, then you will not be afraid of the signs in the heavens. The Goyim will be afraid of those, meaning exactly that. Goyim yechatu ve'en Yisrael yechatu. The Goyim may have to be afraid, the Jewish people not. And the Rebbe explained in that sikha before, the idea is even if the Goyim are doing the right thing, they may still have reason to be afraid, because again, what we're saying ultimately is that the fact that there's an eclipse represents that the mazel right now makes people prone to bad behavior, and the Goyim being more controlled by mazel than we Jewish people are, they have more to worry about. Whereas when we're Oisim, it's under Shamakim, then we're not under the domination of the mazalos at all, and therefore we have nothing to worry about it. The Gemara continues, Tonan Abanan, Bishvil Arba Dvarim Chama Loike. There are four things that go wrong because of which the sun is eclipsed. Number one, Al Av based in Shemes Ve'in and Nisper Kalofa. Because, now Rashi says all these four things, I didn't hear any reason, Rashi says, I didn't hear from my Rebbeim or from anybody, any reason why these four particular Avedas should have this effect. We'll talk about after. We'll talk about Maharsha gives possible reasons for some of them. We'll talk about some other things as well. So b'shvil abad dvarim chamaloka. Number one, al av based in shemes ve'en nisper kalacha, because an av based in passes away and they don't make a proper hesped for him. They don't mourn his death the way they should. Number two, val naira ma'irasa shetzarka ba'ir ve'en mishiyala. When you have a naira ma'irasa, a girl within 6 months after her bas mitzvah, where and she's ma'irasa, she's makudeshes to a man, and somebody goes and is raping her, and she cries out in the city, and nobody is helping her. So that's the second thing. Number three, val mishkav zocher, because of homosexual relations. And number four, val shnei achen shenishpach daman ka'echad, because when two brothers' blood is spilled at the same time. So for all those four things, Hashem, for all those four things, the eclipse has happened. Again, you have the question that we said before. What about what do we do with the fact that eclipses are very mathematically predictable? So again, we have all the explanations from before, but we actually have a couple of other ones as well. The Maharal actually, the first before the Maharal, there's a sefer from a Talmud of the Rosh. The Talmud's name was Rabbi Yitzchak HaYisraeli. He wrote a sefer called Yesod Olam, all about astronomy, and there's a great deal in it about mathematics and spherical trigonometry and everything. It's a fascinating sefer, very deep. Anyway, in that sefer, he deals with how you can calculate the details of eclipses, and he says, how does that fit with the Gemara over here that implies that eclipses come because of these various averis that people do? So he says all of these four things are actually the Chachamim's way of hinting at the cause of an eclipse, meaning we know what causes an eclipse. When a solar eclipse, let's say, is when the moon passes directly in front of the sun. Usually you have every Rosh Chodesh, the moon is the moon is between the sun and the earth, and therefore the lit side is facing away from us, and therefore it's invisible, but usually it's a few degrees north or south of the sun, therefore it doesn't block the sun's light. Every so often, the moon is exactly between the sun and the moon. It is exactly between the sun and the earth, and therefore you have an eclipse. So this Rabbi Yitzchak HaYisraeli explains that actually all these four things in the Gemara over here are actually the Chachamim are hinting to us the astronomical reason how it is that eclipses happen. For example, he says the Av Beis Din passes away and they don't make a hesped for him. It's a metaphorical way of saying like the moon is like an Av, the moon, the new moon over here is like an Av Beis Din that just passed away. It's invisible in the sky, and nobody is noticing it at all because it's sitting over there and blocking the sun. And he explains similarly with each of the other ones that it represents symbolically a way of saying, in other words, that that an eclipse happens only when the sun, only when the moon is directly in front of the sun, neither further north nor further south. The Shnei Achin represents the sun and the moon. The Mishkav Zachor represents like people are doing an unnatural thing that they're not supposed to, and so to speak, that like the moon is doing what it shouldn't and then being in the way of the sun and so forth. The Maharal, on the other hand, that kind of goes almost to the opposite extreme. He explains in one of his drushas that it's the other way around. Here, when we're talking about chamaloika, what we mean is we're talking about that the light of Torah gets diminished from the world, and that happens because of these various averis that we're describing over here. Okay, continues the Gemara. Ubishvil arbad varim ma'odos loikin. Now, there are four things that people do wrong for which the ma'odos, the other heavenly bodies, this, the moon, the stars, for which they are loikin, for which they are eclipsed. Number one, al koisve plaster. For people who write plaster, plaster means forged documents or other kinds of forgeries like that in order to claim that somebody wrote something or somebody did something that he really didn't. So that kind of thing, forged documents and libels and things like that, is the first of the four things for which the ma'odis are eclipsed. The word plaster itself, by the way, is actually related to the word plastic in English. The word plastic comes from a word that means something that can be shaped. And here we're talking about where a person shapes, where a person creates a document that shouldn't really exist. Anyway, number two, v'alma idei edus sheker. Number two, because of people who give false witness. Number three, v'alma gadlei behema daka b'Eretz Yisrael. People who raise small animals in Eretz Yisrael, which the Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma, then the problem is they end up going and grazing in other people's fields, and that becomes a problem. And number four, Val Kotze Lonis Tovis, for people who chop down good trees, which is Baltashchis, and it looks like Rashi says that it amounts to they're saying they're rebelling against Hashem's goodness, and they're saying, yeah, Hashem, you gave me so much goodness, you gave me a fruit tree, but I don't care about that, I'm chopping it down. Marsha explains all these four things are done in secret, or at least in semi-secret, and therefore the appropriate thing for them is that the moon, which itself waxes and wanes and sometimes disappears, gets eclipsed because of that. Next, there are four things that people do wrong because of which their nechasim, their property, ends up getting taken by the government. Number one, al mashe shtores pruim, people who keep around IOUs, documents so that where people owe them money that have already been paid off, and Rashi explains why are they keeping them, because they want to falsely use them again. At some point, they want to be able to claim in Beis Din that the guy never paid me off, and therefore I still have the document, and therefore they're cheating the other guy. Number two, Val Malvi Beribis, people who lend money at Ribis to other Jews. In fact, Rashi brings over here from a Gemara in Bava Metzia in Ezer Neshech that says just that a person who thinks he's going to increase his money, his wealth by lending at Ribis is going to end up, it's all going to end up going to the government. And then the government is going to use it to support poor goy. Number three, Baal Shahya Sipik Biyadim Limchais Vlaimifu. The third thing for which people's money ends up getting taken away by the government is they had the ability to protest against people who are doing Averis, and they did not. And number four, Baal Shaposkin Tzedaka Barabim Ve'enim Noisnin, people who pledged Tzedaka in public and they don't end up giving it. Marsha explains actually that all these four things, these are things where the person might claim that they have an excuse. For example, for the Shtar Perua, he's not going to say, I'm doing it in order to deliberately collect again. That would be outright theft. But he's claiming, I want to keep the document because there's still some bit of a loan that he hasn't paid off, and therefore I want to be able to nudge him for it. Or there's other reasons that I want to be able to keep the thing around and be able to nudge him for it. So he's not saying that I'm going to actually use it to collect falsely, but nevertheless, he's still saying he's going to keep it. I have, let's say, another argument. I have another din Torah against the loiva. So like this, in other words, I want to be able to use this shtar as a basis for migui. And the same thing for each of the other things. Marsha says, we're not talking about where it's an outright avera. With the case of ribis, we're talking about the guy doesn't know enough to be able to make a heter iska. And the same thing with the other, the sipik biyadim limchos is that that so they have the ability to protest, and they're not Talmid Chachamim, maybe, so they could say, I'm not Talmid Chacham, why is it my business? But nevertheless, they had the ability to prevent things from happening, and they didn't. As far as the poskets, Dr. Berdabin, he explains, we could be talking about people where they were saying, you know what, the only reason I pledged in the first place, I didn't intend to give it. The reason I pledged is because I wanted to get other people interested so that they would pledge, so they would pledge as well. Nevertheless, we're still saying that Hashem holds it against them because they still need to follow through. Okay. And the Gemara continues, Omar Rav, Bishvil Arba Dvarim, because of four Averis that people do improperly, Nichse Balabatim Yotzim Timyon. The Nechasim of Balabatim end up going to Timyon. What is Timyon? Rashi explains it's related to the word Nitmomin, means that they end up getting they end up getting blocked off and they end up disappearing on their own. Like buried, so to speak. The Aruch explained that Timyon means the king's treasury, in which case, I guess the difference is Nimsorim Amalchus of the previous one would be that it's given to the government and they end up using it, for example, like we said, to support poor Goyim. On the other hand, here we're talking about where it just goes into the king's treasury and sits there. Anyway, number one, our Kov Sheshar Sofer, people who hold back the people who hold back the wages that they owe a hired worker, meaning, so that would mean, in other words, not that they don't pay him at all, but he keeps on pushing them off. Come back another time and I'll pay you then. Number two, our Ushke Skar Sucker, people who completely hold it back, who don't give it at all. Number three, Val Shapurk and Earl Mount Savarehen, they throw off the yoke from their necks, but no snelachabrehen, and give it to somebody else. In other words, like they say, for example, as far as the taxes that they have to pay, or as far as other things that I can't be bothered, you do it instead of me. That's the third thing. And number four, of gasas haruach, and for being a bal gaiva. Marsha explains that actually all four of these things are aspects of gaiva. The kovish schar sacher, for example, he's not doing it because he says I don't want to pay. He's saying I don't feel like it's beneath me right now to be bothered with paying. And therefore, you can come back another time. My time is more valuable than yours, that kind of thing. And the Oshke Schar Sacher and the Perkin Oil is all the same idea. He explains they're all aspects of Gaiva, where the person says, this is beneath me and I can't be bothered with it. And the Gassas Haruach, Kenegad Kulon, so actual Gaiva is tantamount to all of them, is as bad as all of those Averis put together. Aval, but we want to finish off on a happy note, on a good note. Ba'anovim, see, when it comes to humble people, it says, Ba'anovim Yushu Oretz, the humble people will inherit the world, Ve'isangwa Rav Shalom, and they will enjoy tremendous peace. Which means, in other words, that the opposite of the Balabatim, who are proud, who end up getting harassed by the government and getting their possessions taken away, the Anovim, on the other hand, end up enjoying peace from the government. The government never harasses them and never takes from them what they should. Hadron Alach Hayosh. We're done now mostly with the Dinim of Sukkah. We're going to touch on them a little bit again in the fourth parak. But now we're going to another one of the major mitzvahs of Sukkahs, which is the Dalad Min. So our perek is going to go through, the first half of our perek is going to go through the criteria, what makes the Dalad Minim kosher or otherwise. So we're going to go through them one by one. We're going to go through them in the order, actually, that they're listed in the pasuk. We're going to put the Esrog last, actually, because it has more dinim than all the other ones. But within that, you have kapos tmarim, anaf eitz, which is a lulav, anaf eitz obis, which is the hadas, and arve nocha, which is the arabis. So we're going to go through them in that order, and then we're going to get back to the Esrog later in this parak. So the Mishnah starts off. Lulav hagozel, a lulav that was stolen, the hayovish, or one that is dry, Puzzle is puzzle for the mitzvah. Now, stolen, we're going to talk about in the Gemara. We're going to talk about a couple of angles on it. One point is that it needs to be lochem. The pasuk says lochachtem lochem, so it needs to belong to you. If it's stolen, it's not yours. And another point we're going to talk about in the Gemara is the matter of mitzvah bar baveh. We're going to discuss in the Gemara the interplay of those two things. So at Yavish is posel. So why is Yavish posel? Rashi says, because Zeke Levan Beu. You're supposed to do a mitzvah in the beautiful way. That's Rashi. Tosfos says, come on. I mean, Zeke Levan Beu only applies to Chachila. Why would that be reason enough to make it posel even b'dieved? So Tosfos says rather that the reason is because we because by the Esra of the Pasuk calls it creates hoder. Now we're going to talk later in the Perek what the word hoder means. It has a few different meanings, but the basic meaning of a hoder is beautiful. So we learn from that that the Esra has to be beautiful, and since all the other minim are mentioned together with it, it means all of them have to be beautiful as well. And a dry lulav is not beautiful, and therefore it's possible. Then there's a couple of other interesting ideas about it. The Rosh brings something from the Yerushalmi that a dry lulav is dead. And the Pasuk says, Loi ha-mesim yahalu l'kav. The dead can't praise Hashem. So therefore, a dead lulav or dead other minim cannot be used to praise Hashem and used for the Dalad minim. The Baal HaTurim, in fact, on the Pasuk points out an interesting point. The word lulav itself, and the din applies to all four of them, but the word lulav itself is the same gematria as the word chayim, implying, therefore, that it has to be alive. What exactly is the, how dry it has to be in order to be considered dry, that you also have several different opinions among the Rishonim. Tosfos says it's when it's so dry that it would crack, that it would crack with a fingernail, like you would scratch it with your fingernail and it would crack. A couple of the other Rishonim say something similar. If you fold it, if you fold a leaf in half and it'll crack, but then you have others as well. The Ravid says when it turns completely white, when there's no green in it anymore, which is an earlier stage, it can turn white and it's still flexible. It's still not so brittle that it's going to dry. And then you have also another explanation from the Baal HaMor that it's when there's no moisture left in it. L'maisa, the halacha as brought in Shulchan Aruch is once the green color is gone, then you should be choshish for the Ravid's daya and not use it. But in places like you had in Eastern Europe in the old days where it was very difficult to get the lulavim, then b'dieved you could be soymich on the opinions that as long as it's not so brittle that it's going to crack, then it would be mutter. Then it would be kosher. Okay. Next, the Mishnah continues. Shel ashera, a lulav that comes from an ashera, from a tree that was worshipped, v'shel ireni dachas, or that comes from an ireni dachas, those have to be burnt. Therefore they are possible to use because a lulav has to have a minimum size. We're going to talk about later in the Mishnah. And we have a general rule. Anything which is supposed to be burnt, we consider as if even now already it's burnt and it doesn't have the minimum shear anymore. Therefore it's possible. Next, niktam roshay, if the top of it is cut off. So one possibility is roshay can mean, so again, the problem with that is that it's not hoder, it's not beautiful. So Tosfos says, we could be talking about the top leaf, the tiyomis that we have on the top of the lulav, that if that is chopped off, then it's possible. Tosfos also says though, that actually it might also be niktam roshay means if the tips of most of the leaves along the length of the lulav are cut off, then that would also be possible. The halacha is like both of those, in fact. Also, nifritzu olav, if the leaves of the lulav were torn, if most of the leaves were torn off and they're only tied to it, Rashi describes it as like it resembles a broom. The different exponent, Tosfos has a different possibility. Also, nifritzu olav can mean the lulav leaves we know grow as two leaflets joined together. You have each long lulav leaf you have, but one on one side they're naturally joined together, and on the other side they're separated. So nifritzu olav would also include if those two leaflets are if along most of the length of the lulav, the two leaflets are torn apart like that. So all of those possible, then those are possible as well, because they're not hoder. On the other hand, nifridu olav, if the leaves are spread out, the normal way it works is a lulav is a young branch from a palm tree and the leaves are still tightly bound together. But eventually, as you leave it to grow on the tree, eventually the leaves start opening up and spreading out. Eventually you have, they look like eventually they become like the other branches of the palm tree where the leaves are widely spread apart. So here we're saying that if that's what happens, if the lulav is overgrown and therefore the leaves are spread apart and they're not bound tightly to the shedra, in other words, the ends of them, the root of each leaf is, but the body of each leaf that points away from points doesn't point quite towards the shedra, but points a little bit away, then that's fine. It's kosher, it's still kosher. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a yag general milamayla. Rabbi Yehuda says you still have to bind it higher up. You have to bind those spread out leaves in order to make them be together with the shedra, which we'll talk about on Daf Lamed Aleph, why Rabbi Yehuda said that. Next, continues the mission. It's Sinei Har HaBarzel, the hard palm, the hard palm branches from Harabarzel. Harabarzel literally means the mountain of iron. So it's a mountain, which is where maybe there is iron ore over there, maybe it's just rocks, whatever it is. The point is, it's very poor soil. So therefore, the palm trees that grow there are kind of stunted, and the leaves of them are very short. So nevertheless, Ksheiras, it's still kosher, because as we'll see in the Gemara eventually, the criteria, what we need in order for a lulav to be kosher, even if its leaves are short. And the Mishnah finishes off, lulav sheyesh by shlosha tfachim kedei lenaneya by, a lulav that has a length of three tfachim, enough to shake it. Kosher is kosher, meaning that's the minimum length. The Gemara is going to explain that actually we don't mean three tfachim, what we actually mean is four tfachim. Three tfachim, that where the lulav is bound together with the other minim, because the other minim, the hadas and the arava, also have a minimum length of three tefachim, and one extra tefach that when you shake it, that it should shake independent of the other ones. We'll talk about that in the Gemara, and also also what it means is that Rashi explains, and this is Valacha, that what we mean is the shedra of the lulav, the actual spine of the lulav has to be that minimum length of four tefachim. Beyond that, you have the leaves that stick out above that. So let's start talking about the first two that are in the Mishnah, the stolen lulav and the dry lulav. The Gemara says, kaposit betani. So the Mishnah is telling us a blanket statement that gozel and yavish are possible without differentiating between the different days of Sukkot. Now, later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about that in the Beis Hamikdash, and according to some opinions, in Yerushalayim in general, midaraisa, you have to take lulav for all 7 days. On the other hand, outside Yerushalayim or outside the Beis Hamikdash, midaraisa, you only need to do it for the first day. All the other days is a takana of the Chachamim that we're going to learn later in the Perek, a takana of Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai, zecher the Mikdash, that we should remember how it was in the Beis Hamikdash. So here we're saying that these psulim of Gozel and Yavish apply throughout all 7 days of Sukkot. There's a few different explanations among Rishonim. Are we talking about when the Gemara wants to make a differentiation here between the first day and the other days? Are we talking even within the Daraisa one, meaning in the Beis Hamikdash, or only making the distinction, which is how Rashi and Tosfos say, we're making the distinction between outside the Beis Hamikdash, between the first day, which is Daraisa, and the other days, which are Darabanan. But in other words, the psulim that are Daraisa would apply in the Beis Hamikdash all 7 days, according to that. Anyway, so the question is, Bishlema Yavish, I can understand then why a dry lulav, we don't want any of the days, Hodr Be'in and Valekha, because after all, we want the lulav to be hodder, we want it to be beautiful, and it's not. So therefore it's going to be possible. Ela gozel, but why would a stolen lulav be possible all 7 days? Mishlema yom tevishin, the first day of Sukkot, I understand why. Dichtiv lochem, because the pasuk says it has to be yours, mishel lochem, and therefore for that reason, as we're going to talk about later in the parak, you can't borrow a lulav here. Ela be yom tev sheni amayloi, but why not on the second day of yom tev? Now, when we say the second day of yom tev, not necessarily do we mean yom tev sheni shogolos. A number of Rishonim say that maybe all the psulim that would apply on the first day, maybe they apply to the second day as well, because after all, the second day, when you get down to it, is sveika de yoma of the first day. So therefore, when we say the second day over here, we mean the other days of Sukkot, the third day and on in Chutz Laaretz, the second day and on in Eretz Yisrael. So why would a stolen lulav be possible if lachem doesn't apply during the other days of Sukkot? Now, Taka, why does it not? Tosfos says, because there's a difference between things that are the main part of the mitzvah and things that are like criteria of the mitzvah. So in other words, that the very concept that you should take the four minim throughout the days of Sukkot is a takana derabanan zeichel mitzvah. Within that, then, the Chachamim also added that also the criteria of hodder, which is intrinsic to the minim themselves, then that should be in effect throughout all 7 days of Sukkot. But lachem is not really an intrinsic part; it's like a condition of the mitzvah. So therefore the chachamim didn't need to impose it during all the 7 days of Sukkot. It only exists on the first one, Daraisa, and not the rest of them. Anyway, so the question is, why is a stolen lulav? The Mishnah is implying that a stolen lulav is possible throughout all 7 days of Sukkot. Why? Amr Rav Yechon Mishum Rav Shim Ben Yochai Mishum Dehavle Mitzvah Haba Ba'Aveira. Because it's a mitzvah that happens through an Aveira, and therefore we don't want it. Now, what does it mean, a mitzvah haba ba'Aveira? Tosfos points out there are actually various cases where you have an Aveira was done with something, and nevertheless it's still kosher for a mitzvah. So Tosfos explains the criteria is that when you have something that the mitzvah came about through an aveira. In this case, how do you have this lulav? Only by having done the aveira of stolen, of stealing it. That's what we're calling mitzvah bab aveira. As opposed to if you have something where an aveira was done with it, and now you want to later on use it, that wouldn't necessarily disqualify that. That's according to Tosfos. There are some Rishonim will give a different explanation, which is that we're talking about specifically mitzvah bab aveira is no good when it comes to a mitzvah specifically that is used to make the Jewish people beloved by Hashem. Or like that, that Hashem should remember us. So like that it's meant to be a sanegor, it's meant to be a defender of the Jewish people, and now instead it's going to be a kategor, a prosecutor, because it was brought about through an aveira. So an example of that is a lulav. An example of that is, we're going to say now in the Gemara, is a korban. Another example is a shofar. We wouldn't necessarily, according to those who are showing him, we wouldn't necessarily apply that rule to other mitzvahs. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'havesem gozel, that the Navi criticizes the Jewish people, that you're bringing stolen animals, the esapiseach, the esachola, and you're bringing animals as korbanos that are lame or sick. So why mention all those three things? So gozel, drumya, to piseach. So it means, why is the Navi listing them in that order? First stolen, and then lame. It means there's a similarity. Ma piseach les leitakanda, just like an animal that's lame, there's no fixing it up, because after all, lameness is a permanent wound. The animal is never going to again be qualified for a permanent. Af gozel les leitakanda, therefore, it means that a stolen animal, or in the same thing over here, a stolen lulav, even later on, is not going to have a takana, meaning loishna lifne yush, for loishna la'achar yush. Neither before yush nor after it. In general, we say that yush, when the owner gives up hope of getting it back, usually the gazlan, the ganav, acquires the thing at that point, and he's not necessarily required at that point to return the actual item, just the monetary value of it. But here, since we're comparing gozel to piseach, then we're saying there's no difference, and therefore you can't use it as a korban, and therefore we're saying over here you can't use it as a lulav either. It does mention in Shulchan Aruch that there is also something called, besides Yush, there's also a couple of other things. There's also Shinui Maise and Shinui Rishus. Shinui Maise is when you do something to the object, an irreversible change, and Shinui Rishus would be, for example, if you sell it or give it to somebody else. Those together with Yush are also Koina to a greater extent. And there, it says there, that the post can bring, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that with Shinui Rishus, the other guy would in fact be able to make a brach on it. And when it comes to Shinui Maisa, in principle, then at that point, the Ganav is Koneh. Nevertheless, because as we're saying over here in the Gemara, it still is a mitzvah, Bab Aveda, therefore he can't say Brach. So the Gemara says, we have to consider, Bishlema Lifnei Yush, it's easy enough to understand why you can't use the lulav before the owner had Yush of it, because, or for that matter, that you can't bring an animal as a korban at that point, because... After all, the pasuk says, when a person is makrib from yourselves, meaning in other words, the korban has to belong to you. So v'lavdi dehu, and before yush, it doesn't belong to him at all. El la'achal yush, but you have to ask after yush ha kanye. What didn't he acquire it at that point? La'halacha, and at that point he's not obligated to bring to give the actual thing back to the owner. So why shouldn't he be able to bring it as a korban? The reason must be because the mitzvah bar b'aveira, and therefore that reason alone, even once the stolen animal belongs to him, nevertheless he's also to bring it as a korban. By the same token, then, when it comes to a lulav, even though the owner already had yush, nevertheless he's still not able to use it for the mitzvah. And therefore the Mishnah is implying, therefore, that it's possible not only d'oraisa, the first day, but even all the other days when we only have the mitzvah d'rabbanan. Tosfos, in fact, discusses that we're not just talking about over here Yush. Again, we're talking about Yush and Shinui Maisa, but never Yush and Shinui Hashem. In this case, with the korban, for example, that it was Chulin, now it becomes Hektish, and nevertheless, we're still saying he can't do it because it's Mitzvah Bar Bavet. Also, in this connection, Rabbi Yochanan said, in the name of Rabbi Shim Ben Yochai, to explain about korbanos that are stolen and how Hashem rejects them. My dichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk in Yeshaya, ki ani Hashem oyhev mishpat, because I Hashem love justice, soine gezel b'oyla, I hate stealing with an oyla, meaning when you bring me a korban oyla, I hate that there should be stealing and robbery involved. even though Rashi says everything in the world belongs to me. So now you're bringing it as a korban to me, and it was mine to begin with, because Hashem owes him loya. Nevertheless, I hate that. What does that mean? Moshal melech boss of Adam show you over our base on Mechas. It's like a human king that was passing by the tax collector, where it was passing by the toll booth. And he tells his servants, pay the toll to the toll keepers. So they tell him, what do you need? All the tolls that are collected all go to you anyway. It all belongs to you anyway. So why do you need to pay the toll? And the king tells them, I want all the other travelers to learn from me, that they shouldn't try to evade the toll. So when they see even the king is paying, then they're going to realize how important it is, and they're going to pay it as well. The same way, in the Nimshal, Hashem is saying, Ani Hashem, Sone Gezel Ba'ola, I, Hashem, hate that robbery should be brought as a korban to me, meaning even though the animal was mine the whole time, nevertheless, I hate that that should be done. I don't want robbery to be used as a korban, and mimeni yomadur banai, let my children learn from me, ve'avrichu atzmen min ha-gezel, and keep themselves far away from keep themselves far away from stealing and when from stolen things. So the Gemara finishes off. Itmar Nami, they said also, as far as this discussion, why a gozel and yabish posel? Rab Ami, yabish posel of Nesha in Hodder. Rab Ami says that a dry wool of his posel, like we said, because it's not Hodder, it's not beautiful. And gozel posel, Mishum de Havale mitzvah baba avera, whereas a stolen wool of his is posel for a different reason, because mitzvah baba avera. And therefore, the point is, both of those are posel throughout all 7 days of service. Even though, again, as we said, the rest of the days are, even though from the second day and on in Eretz Yisrael, or the third day and on in Chutz La'aretz, is only the Rabbanon, nevertheless, it's still mitzvah, ba'ba aveira, and therefore it's also to bring. On the other hand, the Gemara says, pliga de Rabbi Yitzchak. Now, that statement of Rabbi Ami and everything that we've been discussing so far disagrees with Rabbi Yitzchak. The Amr Rabbi Yitzchak by Nachmeni Amr Shmuel, lo yishanu ela b'yom tevrishin. No, this that we're saying that a stolen lulav is posel is only on the first day. Because again, the first day it says lochem. The posel says lochachtam lochem by yom harishon. So again, therefore, the psul of lochem applies only on the first day. So therefore, so on the first day, you're not even allowed to borrow a lulav. You certainly can't use a stolen one. Aval b'yom tev sheni. But on the second day, on the second day of Yom Tov, mitoch sheyotze b'shol, since Rabbi Yitzchak ben Nachmani says, the fact is, we know that a person can borrow a lulav during the other days of Sukkot and be yotze with it, therefore, yotze nami begozel, so he says a person can also be yotze on that day with a stolen lulav. So we'll talk about, we're going to continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, and discuss that point more, and discuss about the various dinim involving stealing as far as the Dalet Minim, and what and the practical halachas that come out from that.
What's the exact pasuk? Ulakachtem lachem?
Ulakachtem lachem b'yom harishon, it says. You should take for yourself on the first day, and then it lists the Dalet Minim, priyetz hadar kapis tomorrow, etc. So the point is, by Yom Harishon, on the first day, it has to be lochem, it has to be yours. Therefore, we're saying it can't be stolen, and therefore we're saying it can't even be borrowed. As we're going to talk about later on in the Perek, Bez Hashem, that what you can do is you do matona monas lahasu. The other guy gives you his dalet minim as a present on condition that you return them, and then later on, then you yotze with them and you return them. So that you
can do. It's only on the first day?
For as long as necessary. That the halacha is, and then it comes up in Bava Basra as well, matona amanas lahachzer, shma matona. A matona, when you give a person a present with the condition that he returns it, that is considered the halacha a present. It is considered, for the time being, it's considered completely yours, and therefore that's how you do it. We'll talk about the details of that later in the paragraph, but anyway, so far what we're saying is, as far as a borrowed bulav, everybody agrees it's only in the first day that it's no good, and the rest of the days it's fine. We have a machloikas now here in the Gemara between Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak Bar Nachmani about a stolen bulav or other dalet minim during the rest of Sukkot. Is it possible the rest of Sukkot as well because mitzvah bar ba'avera, or is it kosher because we're only worried about lochem and lochem only applies on the first day?
Shkaya.
Yeah.